cybercrime, macroeconomic conditions, ESG reporting. You can't predict the future, but you can prepare for it. By understanding your risk, you can make your business resilient to challenges on the road ahead. What's more, you can turn those risks into opportunities. EY helps CFOs, boards, and audit committees see beyond the numbers to uncover the critical insights that make their organizations resilient, even in an ever-shifting landscape. For more insights that matter, visit ey.com/beyondthenumbers.
The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. But today, everything costs more. So smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce IT costs, maintenance costs, and manual errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/earnings. netsuite.com/earnings.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Bloomberg Quick Take's Tim Stenovek. We're here every day bringing you the latest news from the worlds of business and finance.
Plus technology, politics, economics, all harnessing the power of Business Week reporters and editors.
Not to mention our 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries.
You can download Bloomberg Business Week on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
You can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Bloomberg Radio.
Or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
Let's bring in our Bloomberg News White House correspondent, Josh Wingrove. He's on the phone from Washington, D.C., because, you know, Josh, we do need to look forward, a new era, as it is always with a new president in Washington. But I do wonder about the old division, how much of that sticks around.
Yeah, I mean, this is the whole pillar of Biden's speech today. If you noticed it, normally inaugural addresses kind of cast forward a little bit to what people want to do with their presidency. True. You kind of ditch the whole policy side of it and talked all about unity, the need to, take down the temperature a little bit, saying that politics doesn't always have to be a raging fire. He didn't name Trump specifically, but it was just a clear repudiation of what he believes Trump's legacy to be. So, you know, Biden believes at least it is possible. He did acknowledge that it might sound a little naive. He tried to point to Vice President Harris as evidence that anything is possible. Of course, historic moment for the U.S. To see her sworn in. This is where he's trying to go. Rubber is going to hit road real quick. I mean, they have disputes in the Senate. They have disputes over how quickly they can confirm their cabinet. And of course, that COVID bill is just going to be front and center. Biden wants something yesterday, basically, and it's not clear what Republicans have an appetite for.
Yeah, and it's not just the COVID bill. I mean, millions of Americans woke up early this morning, Josh, to find that the president, Biden, that is, would sign executive orders to swiftly unwind Trump policies on immigration, on health. Take us through the big ones here.
Yeah, and we're going to see, I think, some of these go forward, in the coming days. There'll be, a batch, or at least they've signaled there'd be a batch of stuff every day. You know, these executive actions, like some of the things he's doing today are pretty standard. He's going to rejoin the WHO. They're going to rejoin the Paris Climate Agreement. He's going to issue a mask mandate. So on interstate travel, in other words, federal turf, you got to wear a mask. And in federal buildings, you got to wear a mask. But, you know, executive orders, Trump loved them. But the real downside of them is that, you know, as easy as they are for a president to do, flick of a pen, they often don't have a lot of teeth behind them. And so Congress really is the gatekeeper on a lot of things, in particular, of course, stuff that requires money, and vaccines require money, and testing requires money. So a lot of his goals, particularly early on, are really going to be subject to seeing what gets done in Congress. Jen Psaki, who is his White House press secretary, of course, as about 2.5 hours ago, said this morning on CNN, she was asked, listen, is it fair to say that stopping the pandemic is his number one concern? And she said, yes, that is fair.
You know, it's interesting. And for those who are watching on YouTube, our YouTube channel, You know, the president and the vice president and former presidents Obama, George W. Bush and Clinton, along with their spouses, they are at Arlington National Cemetery at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. They will lay a wreath there. And that's the visual that we've got at this hour. But I'm looking at, you know, past administrations, and we had a financial crisis that two of them had to deal with. We had healthcare overhaul. We've had some really big agendas, but I look at the agenda, Josh, that is facing this current president. It is, as you just laid out, a massive one, a costly one. And even though he will not be the Senate Majority Leader, the new Senate Minority Leader, Mitch McConnell, will play a crucial role. Will he be more collaborative?
Collaborative is a strong word. He believes that there should be a power-sharing type of agreement, which has been done in the past when the Senate has had a 50-50 split. Now, it's been quite some time since that was the case, and in the meantime, a lot of Democrats think that Mitch McConnell played such hardball when he was majority leader that they believe he's almost forfeit the right to ask them for a penny, let alone a buck, you know? So I think that there'll be a lot of opposition to that. Now, this will be one of the things I think where Biden's belief that there could be a bipartisan era still in Washington will come to the fore. If Biden sort of asks or gives his blessing to Chuck Schumer to, you know, actually try and cooperate with McConnell, that might be where they go. But there will be pressure, certainly, in the Democratic Party to just absolutely go hard to the wall and keep box McConnell out of anything. So there's a rub right now on that one.
Look, sure. All of this, Josh, is happening as Trump, who's no longer president, is facing trial in the Senate for impeachment. Explain the backdrop here and how Democrats can push forward this message of unity while also at the same time trying the ex-president.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it's very unclear how this is going to proceed. Nancy Pelosi is saying she'll hand over the articles soon. It's not clear that she's not going to sit on them for a while, which could sort of drag things out. And it's very unclear that there would be enough votes to convict the president. In fact, it seems pretty clear that there are not enough votes to convict the president. And the longer he's out of office, you have to think, the longer the temperature comes down.
Well, look, even with what McConnell said yesterday, he said that the mob attack on the Capitol was, quote, provoked, and he kind of condemned it in the most in no uncertain terms.
He did, but I suppose it shows depends who shows up, but I have a hard time thinking that 2/3 of people present, in other words, up to 17 Republicans, would vote to commit or would vote to convict the president on his impeachment charge. I have been wrong before. It's still Donald Trump's Washington in some ways, yeah. You know, so anything is possible. But I think right now Biden has made clear that his number one priority is not an impeachment of Donald Trump. It's this COVID package. And remember, the numbers just are alarming across the board. The vaccine rollout has been sluggish. And Biden has been saying we are in for a long winter and it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Right. Let's not forget, you know, we are focusing on politics and we've focused on politics a lot over the last couple of weeks, understandably. But at the same time, those virus numbers, as Josh said, continue to astound. And, you know, we go through them and we tick through them every day here at Bloomberg. But it is certainly worrisome. And that will be obviously top of his mind, top of his agenda, the new incoming president. And it does look like for those listening on radio, watching on our YouTube channel, the president, the new president, Biden, the vice president, Kamala Harris, they and their spouses, I believe, are headed towards the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier to lay a wreath there. And they are there along with past presidents.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovic from Bloomberg Radio.
Let's not forget that the big problem facing this country right now is getting the pandemic under control. If you're out there in the West Coast, if you're out there in the LA area specifically, you know, you're seeing this firsthand. They're seeing the crisis at its peak like we saw last spring here in New York City. And, you know, this is crucial to getting this under control. We've talked about the problems with rolling out the vaccines. And as we've opened up kind of the spigot when it comes to who can get it, now we're seeing supply constraints or logistics logistical constraints. And this will be top of mind and something that the president and his team will have to deal with, because this is necessary and crucial in order for us to reopen our economy. We got glimmers of it over last summer, right, when it eased back here and we started to see life come back a little bit. But then, of course, fall hit and the cold weather hit, and it wasn't eradicated. So we know we need really the mass amount of the population to get the vaccine in order for us to hit herd immunity.
And Biden has ambitious goals, 100 million in the first 100 days, a million a day.
Yeah. So listen, this following all of this will go to our team in D.C., and that includes our Amanda Coulson Hurley. She's politics editor at Bloomberg Business Week. She and her team at the magazine will be tracking this new president and his initiatives and his agenda. She joins us, by the way, on the phone from Washington, D.C. Joel Weber is also with us, editor at Bloomberg Business Week, on the remote access from Brooklyn. As we said 4 years ago, Joel, it's a new political era. It's a new individual at the White House, and that means a new agenda.
A new agenda, that's right. And you know, it all kind of gets started now. And one of the things that we're wrestling with in this issue of the magazine, is which is our annual The Year Ahead issue, is obviously all of the big themes that we can expect to be talking about. And Biden and the U.S. government is going to be first and foremost on our minds. And that obviously brings us to Amanda, who there's a forthcoming story that I thought was really well done about what we can expect from Biden at the outset here. So a little sneak peek from this forthcoming issue. What are the advantages that Biden inherits, and what are some of the limitations that we expect him to encounter as he attempts to govern here, Amanda?
Yeah, well, I think Biden is very fortunate in having a Democratic trifecta, right? So, and that is something of a surprise. I think before the Georgia runoff on January 5th, it was sort of expected that the Republicans would hold on to the Senate, and that there, you know, he would be kind of limited in what he could do. But with the somewhat surprise wins of the Democratic candidates in those runoffs, the split in the Senate is now 50-50, with Kamala Harris being the tiebreaker, which means that that there's more that Biden can do now. So, you know, he's already said that he, you know, unveiled this $1.9 trillion next round of stimulus that he's saying that's a kind of immediate relief plan. And then he wants to do something kind of, you know, even bigger, well, not necessarily with a higher dollar amount to it, but, you know, a kind of maybe kind of longer term, deeper type of stimulus afterwards. So, you know, he has some wind in his sails now, but of course he's walking into this job, you know, with the pandemic having fiercely come back and, you know, worse than ever. We just hit, 400,000 deaths, a terrible milestone. You know, the economy is still really faltering. So he certainly has a very tough task before him.
The president also is eager to attack climate change. This is something that he's made clear during the transition with the appointment of John Kerry as his climate czar. And we're seeing on our live blog right now a tweet from Gary Cohn, the former Goldman Sachs COO, former Trump advisor, saying, quote, "While the Paris Agreement may be far from perfect, it is the best available option to tackle one of the greatest issues of our time. I'm happy to see the U.S. re-entering this agreement and asserting global leadership." When it comes to climate change and the environment, how are you thinking about it at Business Week and covering Biden's agenda and making sure that the U.S. is at the forefront of this?
That's a great question. And I, Joel might have some other thoughts on it, but I think what's really interesting is probably the way we cover it will reflect how I think maybe Biden and the Democrats will try to get you know, major climate legislation through, which is probably packaging it as, you know, some measures as a kind of infrastructural improvements and, you know, research and development advances. and green jobs, you know. Biden's big climate plan, I think he calls it Build Back Better, is not the Green New Deal, but it has kind of some of those echoes of looking at climate action and at the goals of it as not just being, you know, reducing emissions, at these kind of other benefits, and at a sort of retooling the economy, right? And so I expect that he's going to be hitting those notes as he tries to achieve his climate goals, and we'll be assessing, you know, what those costs and benefits, you know, really are to the best of our ability.
You know, Amanda, there's a couple other bullet points from the issue that I thought were just a great little cheat sheet. And just to kind of run through them, I think the ones that we're the most interested in for the magazine that will continue to hit in the days, weeks, months, years ahead. Immigration, taxes, healthcare, judicial appointments, and political investigations. I want to actually just go to healthcare first, because this was something that you know, Biden was involved in the Obama legacy, and I'm interested in sort of how what we can expect on the healthcare front, we think, in these next few months, and then also let's take the judicial appointments.
Judicial appointments is going to be an interesting one to watch. I think, as we note in the magazine, you know, Biden's path will be a lot smoother now, you know, with the Senate under Democratic control. So, you know, if one of the Supreme Court justices were to retire, there's already, you know, chatter about maybe Stephen Breyer stepping down. There will not be a situation, you know, where there will be a vacant seat for months and months, you know, as there was when President Obama nominated Merrick Garland. You know, that's going to make Biden's life a lot easier going ahead.
Yeah, and one thing, I'm curious too, Amanda, about, listen, President Trump, we're expecting him to be part of the political scene going forward. So how do you think about, he's not going to be president, but how do you think about some of the coverage that might be something you need to think about, include going forward? Or how do you think about it, at least at this point?
Yeah, well, I mean, definitely he's not president anymore. And, you know, the bar for what, you know, what in the Trump universe gets covered, I think, becomes that much higher, right? But, you know, I think it is very interesting that he's going back to Florida, and reportedly a number of members of his family are also looking to, you know, locate to Florida, looking for property there. He is reportedly thinking about building his presidential library and museum in Florida. And there's also, you know, I think some conservative media outlets that are Florida-based that he, if he wanted to have
right,
more of a media presence and megaphone, he could get it there, even, you know, even though he's been thrown off of a lot of social media now. But so I think it'll be interesting to kind of watch that potentially this kind of Trump world take root in this kind of other political establishment of Florida.
Right.
But we'll, you know, certainly be covering, you know, there's still an impeachment trial to come. And I think the impeachment trial and its aftermath might answer, I think, what is a very big question, which is, you know, in the days after January 6th, this seems to be a huge stain on his presidency and on, you know, his allies potentially, but maybe, you know, is that going to last forever? And how bad is that going to look long term?
Bottom line, you guys are going to be busy, no doubt. Amanda, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. I know it's been a busy day for you guys. Amanda Coulson-Hurley, politics editor at Bloomberg Businessweek, from the nation's capital. Jill Weber, editor at Bloomberg Businessweek, on the remote axis. You can check out more about the year ahead, you name it, when it comes to business, politics, economics. It's all in this upcoming issue.
This episode is brought to you by EY. How can EY teams help you create a better version of your company? We work with you to turn data into greater insights, invest to drive growth, and realize your strategic vision through thoughtful implementation. Visit ey.com/reimagine to learn more.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest-growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at stiefel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
So, Tim, I think it's safe to say that we've got two top stories today. Obviously, the swearing in of a new president of the United States. We've covered that. The other, the biggest problem that faces the Biden administration from day one, and that is the health pandemic.
Yeah, it is. Look, 400,000 people have died in the United States as a result of the pandemic.
Right.
As you and I mentioned, the economic recovery inextricably linked to the successful rollout of the vaccines. Carol, it is such a shame that the vaccines were developed at record pace, but the rollout has been so bumpy, and we can only hope that it gets smoother.
And this on a day where we had a story, you and I both saw it, New York City rescheduling 23,000 vaccine appointments due to shortages, that supply shortage. Let's get to someone who's been a go-to voice for us often. He oversees the largest healthcare provider and private employer in New York State. Back with us is Michael Dowling, president and CEO at Northwell Health. He's also author of the book Leading Through a Pandemic, The Inside Story of Humanity, Innovation, and Lessons Learned During the COVID-19. Talk about creating the playbook as we go. He joins us on the phone once again from New Hyde Park, New York. Michael, nice to have you back. How are you and how's your team doing?
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be with you. We're doing well. The team is doing well. I've been at this COVID issue now for a long, long time, but healthcare workers are very resilient, and we are doing well, positive morale, and obviously looking forward to being able to vaccinate as many people as we possibly can now.
But are you seeing shortages when it comes to access to vaccines?
Yes. I mean, we have the infrastructure is in place, which takes a couple of weeks to set up. We have multiple sites available to do vaccinations, but we don't have enough supply. And hopefully, if we get the supply, and I'm hoping now with a new leadership in Washington that there will be a change there, but we can vaccinate a lot more each day if we know that we have the supply and we know when it's coming. And that's the only restriction at the moment. I mean, most of the other startup problems that we may have had a month ago, 3 weeks ago, have been resolved. And today it's a matter of getting enough vaccines.
Well, speaking of that, we learned earlier today that New York City has had to reschedule 23,000 vaccine appointments due to a shortage. What happens if somebody gets their second dose late?
Well, you do have a couple of days of leeway here, and we should be doing everything possible to make sure that the people get the second dose around the time that they're supposed to get it. So what I'm doing here at Northwell is that I am reserving doses for the second. I'm reserving vaccines so I can guarantee to people that if they get the first dose, I will have the vaccine in place to give them the second dose. And that's the way I believe this should be done, so we can guarantee when people come in that there will be enough available for them to get the second dose. I believe that it's the right way to do it. I believe the science supports it doing this way. And if you don't get the second dose at all, I do know you have some immunity, but we don't know how long it's going to last, and we don't know how effective it's going to be.
Right.
I don't think it's a chance worth taking.
Michael, you know, I'm going to go Tom Keen on everybody for a moment. Tom Keen, our beloved Tom Keen of Bloomberg Surveillance. You run a massive hospital system, healthcare system. Right. You can pick up the phone and call a CEO of Pfizer or, you know, Moderna and say, what's the problem? What is the holdup in terms of getting more manufacturing of vaccines? Is it we don't have the factories? Is it that we don't have the bottles? Do we not have the needles? What is it? And what are you hearing?
I hear that the production process is being accelerated, and we hear that there will be many more vaccines made available now in the next couple of weeks, and hopefully even sooner than that. I have not spoken to any of the pharma companies directly and or personally. I believe that's up to this point, that's what the federal government was doing and working with them closely, hopefully. So I don't know the exact reason why it has been a little bit slow to this point. But remember also, if you go back, it's only like, 6 weeks ago, five, 6 weeks ago since the vaccine was made available the first time.
Right.
So people have to be a little bit patient here. I mean, there are people that want instant gratification. Something just happens today and they want the world to be fixed tomorrow. It takes a little bit of time. I'm hoping with new leadership in Washington that everything will be accelerated, and hopefully we will have new vaccines by Johnson & Johnson maybe in the future.
Right.
And who knows with AstraZeneca. And so I do think time will take care of the problem. The trouble is everybody's getting impatient, and I understand this. We want this over with as quickly as we possibly can. We are ready once the vaccines arrive.
To be fair, though, Michael, is that we knew this vaccine was coming for a long time. I mean, these were conversations I think we had with you months ago as well. And I'm not pointing the finger at you, but I mean, I think the system overall, the government overall, knew that logistics and distribution were going to be a big part of this. And I just wonder what happened.
Well, I think that it wasn't thought through as well as it should have been. It was excessively micromanaged. You know, you had, you know, groups 1A, groups 1B, 1A plus, and excessively micromanaged. I have felt from the very beginning where you have very large systems like ours, and you just give us the vaccines, you give us general guidelines, and then you get out of the way. Mm. But it was a little bit overly bureaucratized. And hopefully we're learning from that. But we are where we are at the moment. You know, you can't go back and undo what happened a month ago or 3 months ago. We are where we are. We are ready to go. We are vaccinating. I vaccinated about 43,000 employees and about 20,000 people in the community. And we're now doing second doses. And I've opened up about 25 vaccination sites. But I had to close 5 of them a week ago because I didn't have enough vaccines. That's the problem now. I'm optimistic that this will be taken care of in the relatively near future.
When do you feel like we start to feel more normal as a society, where things are opening up and maybe we're still wearing masks, but there's a sense of security that we will have when we go out and do things with other people in maybe larger groups that we don't currently have right now?
Well, I think that hopefully we will see an opening and a breaking of the crisis in the next 3 months or so. I would hope that by the end of the spring that we would be able to get out and about a bit more. Hopefully the restaurants will be opening, and I hope that will happen sooner. So I think we're going through this until the end of the spring. But we have to be careful, though. I think we have to be continuously cautious, and that, and especially now when the vaccine is being distributed, that people still wear masks to the extent that they can, that they're still social distance, that we don't do stupid things. I mean, we don't get together in large groups. where it is very obvious if you don't do the right things, you have the possibility of transmitting the virus. So I think we have to be careful. I don't think we will be back to a normal. It'll be a new kind of normal, I think, until the early fall. And I think we can handle this. I mean, we have to be optimistic and positive about this. It's a bit of a disruption, but we can handle this, and therefore we have to look at it with a positive attitude.
I like your attitude. I think it's been really a challenge for me in January. I think a big part of it is, you know, being away from my family for the holidays, the disruptions, and also, of course, just the staggering numbers of deaths that we've seen in the United States. I mean, it's absolutely heartbreaking for so many people out there. And I think every American has been affected by this. It's just no way they haven't. I've been talking a lot with my wife about this, what this looks like on the other side, Michael. She was saying, hey, I think we're going to be wearing masks for a very long time. Like, we're going to be the generation that wears masks, and our kids might think it's weird. But that's us. I mean, is that what you see? Is that the new normal?
Oh, I think that when masks are not that difficult to wear. I mean,
I agree.
You're used to it. I mean, it's not.
So that's a yes.
I'm not complaining. I'm just wondering, like, when we talk about the other side of this, are we going to go back to being able to, like, not wear masks around the office?
I think, for example, we've had very little flu season this year. Less kids getting sick from normal flu stuff. So I think in the future, let's assume COVID disappears this year. And next year, and the flu season arrives, I think you will see more and more and more people wearing masks, that they will say, you know, this is a very good preventive way to prevent normal, you know, regular things from happening during a regular flu season. So I think that masks will be with us for a long time. You know, that some groups of people, I mean, have been wearing, if you've been in the city 2-3 years ago, you saw certain people from the Far East wearing masks, walking around the city.
And if you were traveling around the world, you'd see it too.
Around the world, yes. So I think it's going to be part of our arsenal, part of our costume going forward. Not necessarily all the time, but when we believe it is necessary, I think it'll be with us. And we're protecting each other, we're protecting our friends, our neighbors, and preventing people from getting sick. So what's the big deal? We will get used to it like we get used to a lot of other things.
Listen, if we can carry our phones around with us all the time, can't we just kind of add on a mask and just make it kind of the norm? No, I'm serious, right? Like,
yeah.
Who would have thought that there would have been, you know, years ago? Yeah, go ahead.
Somebody would probably be innovative enough to put a phone inside the mask.
Now we're talking.
I was actually just thinking, like,
there's
right, wouldn't that be
angle.
The great thing? What's the thing, though, that worries? Just last question, Michael. I love your optimism, too, and I love your realism. What's the one thing, though, that worries you just a little bit here and just got about a minute left?
I think, today with the new change in Washington, a dark cloud has been lifted. And I think we can see a little bit of sunshine. We can see hope and decency, hopefully, and a sense of optimism about the United States is a great place. New York is a fabulous city. New York is going to come back. We've gone through a rough period. And I just think that we should look forward with a great sense of positivity and optimism. Unify, trust one another, throw oxygen on that which is good, not on that which is not so good. Be positive and build a sense of community. The one thing COVID has demonstrated is that we're all interdependent. Mm-hmm. What happens in one part of the community affects every other part. We've all been affected by this. We have to bring back that positive sense of community. We're united, we're Americans, we're proud, we're positive, and there is nothing that we cannot achieve.
Hear, hear.
Okay.
Oh, little music to take you out there. There's gremlins, I think, everywhere. Michael, what a nice way to wrap it up there. Michael Dowling, President and CEO at Northwell Health. He's also got a book out, Leading Through a Pandemic, and I highly recommend that people check it out.
This episode is brought to you by EY. How can EY teams help you create a better version of your company? We work with you to turn data into greater insights, invest to drive growth, and realize your strategic vision through thoughtful implementation. Visit ey.com/reimagine to learn more.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
How about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I want to drive.
Just drive, baby.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
All right, it is time for the Drive to the Close, but driving to the White House, and actually not driving anymore to the White House, is President Biden and the new First Lady. They are actually walking up to the White House, the last, I would say, block or two or so, a couple of blocks. They got out of the motorcade. They were going from Arlington Cemetery on their way back to the White House in a motorcade along with the vice president. They got out and walked and were actually greeting members of the press and other individuals on the side of the road.
This
is much more reminiscent of what we have seen in inaugurations.
I was just going to say that, Carol, there is some sort of semblance of normalcy here. Masks certainly excluded from that. But,
right.
You know, the idea that everybody is in masks makes you realize that this is 2021 and that we're in the midst of a pandemic right now. But yeah, there's a sort of sense of normalcy to this inauguration, even though it was far from normal.
And reacting with people who, you know, the voting public.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is we are now seeing the president and the first lady there at the White House. You can watch this on our YouTube channel as we speak. Just search on Bloomberg Global News. You can also, if you're on the Bloomberg, go to Live Go and watch this coverage as well. But again, walking up to the White House, the new president and the new first lady. All right, we'll continue to monitor the comings and goings of the new president. Right now, though, we do want to get to our market guest. Ryan Jacob is back with us, Chairman, Chief Investment Officer, and Portfolio Manager, Jacob Asset Management, a top performer. The Internet Fund, the Jacob Internet Fund, beating just about all of its peers over the past 5 years in the 91st percentile, according to our data, returning 37% on average annually. Ryan, good to have you here with us. Ryan's on the phone in California. New administration, potentially new era, maybe new regulations. How does it factor in, if at all, in terms of how you think about the stocks that you are investing in and including in your funds?
Well, the administration change is obviously a big deal. The relationship among the larger technology companies has been pretty terrible recently. So I don't imagine it'll get worse. How much better it gets is hard to know. There are a lot of other Democratic priorities that could become issues here. But for the most part, I would say conditions will probably improve.
Conditions will improve between, let me make sure I have this right, between the administration and the tech companies?
I believe so. I think it'll be a little less. Yeah, in some ways, in terms of the administration change in the White House, it'll probably be a bit less combative.
That's interesting because there is, you know, there does seem to be some bipartisan agreement, rare bipartisan agreement to, I don't want to say rein in big tech, but, you know, there are monopoly concerns when it comes to some of the large tech companies. And then on the Republican side, there are concerns about free speech and Section 230. I'm, you know, not going to get into those now, but it does seem like the tech companies are in the crosshairs of Democrats and Republicans. But you don't think there's too much to fear?
I think the free speech and Section 230 issues were more existential threats to the larger tech companies. I think that the antitrust issues are more what we're used to in terms of scrutiny. And it's not going away for sure, but it'll probably be more manageable. Unfortunately, it is going to be something that's going to be there for the next few years that's going to create a lot of headlines. I think in terms of actual actions, it'll be pretty limited.
And we do want to point out President Biden and the First Lady and his family, they are at the White House and they are entering into the building. Hey, so Ryan, transformative technologies, you know, you look at the tech sector, you've done really well. Let's talk about names that you like. Twilio is one of those. It's an infrastructure software company. It's already up about 14% this year. It gained 244% last year. What is it that you like about this company specifically?
Well, Twilio has really enabled communication, the evolution of communication of businesses through the pandemic. Companies that were offline companies had to learn to get online quickly. So whether it's through delivery or notifications, Twilio provides kind of that utility-like aspect to electronic communications between the business and their customers. A lot of businesses had been considering adding these features. COVID really pushed it forward and made it a necessity. And these are features that won't go away. So Twilio has been a huge beneficiary of this. And we think that will just continue.
We're going to be talking to co-founder and CEO Jeff Lawson tomorrow. What would you ask him?
Well, I guess broadly speaking, as we're communicating in different ways, whether it's device to device or on social media platforms, how they basically help their customers integrate so they're touching their customers at all these different points and enabling two-way communication that, quite frankly, is probably one of the biggest hot-button issues for company in terms of being able to communicate and knowing their customers. So it's really increasing the breadth rather than being just texts back and forth or your Ubers in the corner. It's more a broader picture of how this communication can go back and forth.
Ryan, I also know, thanks to our producers, that you describe some of the run-up that we've seen in companies like Zoom, Peloton, Shopify, Tesla, these so-called COVID names. Extreme euphoria is how you describe it, and you say they're highly inflated. The question is are they due for a pullback?
Well, Twilio is an example of a company where things were accelerated, and there's a real use, a real use impact there. With these other companies, they saw an enormous uptake of their services because of stay-at-home orders and work from home, et cetera. So, and their valuations have really just exploded. And so the question for these companies are, is there some sort of artificial effect in the results that will be difficult to replicate this year as we get out of COVID, and because the valuations are really reflecting their business progression in 2020, does it reflect 21 and 22? That's the big question.
Well, it's interesting. Tesla's not just I can get what you mean in terms of Zoom and Peloton and even Shopify. Tesla, though, are you just saying that because they were just doing so well this year, this wasn't necessarily a pandemic story, but you're questioning whether or not that growth continues this year?
Tesla is a whole different conversation.
Okay.
You're right. There's no doubt. And there's a whole host of other different issues there. And they really are, you get into the conversation, is it a car company? Is it a technology company? There's a lot of debate back and forth. We don't own Tesla.
Why don't you own it?
The valuation is, you have to assume that Tesla will be the unimpeded leader of the electric car industry over the next few decades. And that's not something we'd be comfortable saying at this point.
Right. Especially when there's more and more competition. There's a story on the Bloomberg about kind of everybody, whether it's VW, whether it's BMW, they're all kind of gunning.
They have
Tesla.
To.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
They have no choice.
All right. You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week. We are thanks to Ryan Jacob.
Thanks for listening to Bloomberg Business Week. Download the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
And you can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.